the US version of the, is that about Academy Dojo? If you're not familiar with that, that is a program that one of the leading Japanese critics, Asuna Hiroki, and a young up-and-coming Japanese editor, Katsuya Ota, premiered Faust and Kodansha Box a couple of years ago. They came up with this program where they went out to fans, to critics, to the industry, and put them on the spot to try to have them rethink their pop culture. And it was pretty much like a, almost like a round robin type of competition where people would, they would be given situations where they had to kind of think outside of their comfort zones and do projects outside of their comfort zones also. So for example, there was like a debate to start off, and people had to create like a lesson plan for school. Then they had to draw doujinshi and then sell that at a convention. And all of these things were kind of tabulated on this weighted system. And in the end, they ended up picking a winner. This duo whose focus was entirely on Bada manga, random, but we're not going to do all the other things because I don't think we're going to be able to sell doujinshi here, or I don't think you want to see the doujinshi that these people can come up with.
No.
But we can do a little bit of debate. We can discuss this culture a little bit. And this focus is going to be almost entirely on manga, because that's what I know, that's what I love. And while these people beside me, they come from different branches of criticism and academia and industry, I think we all do share all that one thing. That's manga culture. Even those of us who focus on a little more more on the anime side, much of that is often inspired by manga as well. So we'll start off by figuring out who's going to lead off this conversation. And I wasn't going to do much of a quiz. I will ask one question to the audience. I mean, to the panel here. It's a pretty simple question, but it's gonna be tricky because the answer isn't as obvious as you might think. In 2009, new manga properties, new manga licenses dropped in the U.S. and actually that's kind of the case in Japan as well. And actual overall sales have also gone down. So my question here is, see if people can give me guesses. What was the best-selling new series that was launched in 2009? And think about it for a couple of seconds, and we'll take answers from the far right.
Is this
working?
Ko just got here, so Ko, what's the best manga that came out in what? Now in Japan or in America?
In America.
In America, the best license that was announced in 2009.
Best new property.
Best new property.
Licensed in the U.S.
Licensed in 2009, or did the first book?
In 2009.
Did the first book come out in 2009?
Yes.
Okay.
Here, go.
Go, Ko.
Does the Yosuba re-release count?
Yeah, it does count.
I need to catch my breath for a minute, but while I'm catching my breath, that would be my provisional answer.
Okay, pass it on to Aaron.
Did the first volume of Pluto come out in 2009?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to say Pluto.
Next.
Okay.
Oh my God, trying to remember everything that came out in 2009. There were so many.
Remember, this is exclusive to debuted in 2009.
Right.
Don't think about it too
much. Well, it's me, so I'm going to say Blackjack.
Blackjack, okay. Next.
I'm going to guess some sort of IP tie-in. Kingdom Hearts, I'm not sure it's not that one, but something along those lines.
Kingdom Hearts, okay.
I was going to say, does it absolutely have to be Japanese? Or does it just have to be from a...
It's from a manga publisher.
Twilight.
Oh, that didn't come out in 2009, but that's not bad. Okay, Bridget?
I'm totally drawing a blank on this, but from previous experience, I would say maybe something like one of the Warriors manga.
Oh, not bad either. We'll start off with Mike Tool. The answer is Maximum Ride.
I was in the ballpark. Okay.
Yeah. Maximum Ride actually in 2009.
Patterson, not Meyer.
Yeah. Two volumes were released, and book scan numbers alone for that property were around 80,000 units combined. So that's actually pretty good.
Okay.
But 80,000 units for a year, you know, that is a decline in manga. There was a time when, you know, brand new titles that were really popular, Bleach, Death Note, Naruto, Fruits Basket, you know, they skewed into six digits for the first year. So, and it's interesting there that, you know, it's not even a manga title, I mean, not even a Japanese title that leads the way. And that's kind of where we're going to go with your question, Mike. You know, we're here at an anime convention and, you know, Japanese J-pop content. You know, is J-pop content on the decline as a whole? I mean, is it as secure as it used to be? I mean,
well,
if the best properties aren't doing that well anymore.
Well, I mean, if you're asking is if the Japanese culture signature, if you will, is on the decline based on what I've seen here, I'd say that's an unquestionable yes. I don't think it's going to lose its position as an anchor for events like this or for this culture.
Yep.
But there's more and more stuff that comes creeping in every year and stealing mind share away, whether it be video games, whether it be movies, whether it be the Progressive Insurance commercials.
The Flow?
Yeah. There was a Flow cosplayer here.
Oh, that's right.
She was quite good, too.
We'll be writing doujinshi about Flow and...
Yeah.
I think I saw somebody dressed as Jamie from Mythbusters, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and of course, there is a Billy Mays here. There is a Billy Mays at every anime con now.
I mean, you know, we're all here to have fun, right? But, I mean...
Ostensibly, we're also here to promote, and that's what you're worried about.
Yeah, so, well, you know, as a publisher, definitely. You know, we all want to see this, you know, this content do well and be enjoyed and be shared. And you know, I kind of wonder if that's gonna, you know, do we have to have like an infusion of sorts or?
There's no easy answer to that. One of the biggest, one of the biggest new expansions in anime and manga delivery is, of course, online. Mm. The problem with that is, whether it's legitimate or illegitimate,
right.
The problem with that is what happens is you have every piece of intellectual property ever created competing with everything. So anytime something new comes out, it's new, but it's still competing with everything that's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there's this weird kind of... vacuum effect in it for older stuff. Like, you know, I've been seeing stuff this weekend, like, you know, someone will show a clip from Utena, which was very popular a few years ago, and there are people in the audience, like a majority of the audience, that are like, wait a minute, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
And they can't find out because it's out of print.
Right.
And there's not really anywhere to get it online either.
Right.
If I can interject, I think there's an issue where there's a glut of media choices where you can watch new YouTube clips all day, every day, if that's your interest. And I think anime and manga has to a certain extent ghettoized itself, which is why something like Maximum Ride, which has sort of an in to sort of a larger audience, gets the sales, because people who don't think of themselves as anime fans or manga fans will buy that, whereas anime and manga, the fans are into it, and other people say, oh, I don't trust those people, I don't trust their tastes, and a lot of the anime manga distributors haven't figured out how to sell to those broader audiences.
Okay.
Well, I think the other issue is, like, if you follow some of the work that's being done academically on things like media convergence and the general, you know, issues in the media landscape, you know, one of the things that's been happening in kind of, I guess you could maybe say the digital era or whatever since the internet, has been a general increasing fragmentation of audiences. You know, a long time ago, it used to be that you had like a few radio channels and you had like a limited number of television channels and everything was promoted through that. And so like in music, record companies, you used to have these massive, massive stars that, I mean, stars like say Michael Jackson or Madonna. Now you really don't have people. And a lot of people are saying that there'll never be anybody that big again because the internet, even though it's made it easier in a lot of ways for smaller things to find an audience, it's broken down that more streamlined channel of promotion. So everything is splitting out. And I think we're seeing that even in niche things like anime and manga, where everything gets split out into like niche fetishes or niche like interests. So it's not just like anime or manga fans, now it's like, you know, the moe fans over here, the harem fans over here, the fujoshi over here, and then even those groups are fragmented into the different specific things that they like.
That like makes me wonder if marketing is even relevant anymore, but you know, we'll move on from there. You know, I want to ask Bridget. You know, Bridget's, she's in a unique position. She's been blogging about manga for a while.
5 years.
And, you know, one thing I've noticed is that, you know, I consider her blog to be this, essentially an aggregator of, like, everything that people discuss about manga. I mean, she covers almost, I'd say around at least 80% of what's being discussed in English. And, you know, just within the content alone, where's manga changed from what you've been seeing? Able to get all this information.
Yeah. Well, obviously there's more of it. I started Manga Blog because my kids were reading manga, and I was like, what is this stuff? And I went on the web, and there was very little to be found about it. The only discussions that were taking place, there were a few blogs, and then there were a lot of live journal communities, which were like fan communities. Centered around particular like the Sailor Moon LJ community and the Death Note and like that. And so one of the things that I found is that now there's a lot more diversity and people are more articulate. I mean, if you look at, you know, my manga blog posts from 5 years ago, they're short. Now they're long because there's more conversation. The conversation's gotten more sophisticated. People aren't yelling about global manga anymore. They're talking about different niches. They're doing the thing that you hate, where they go on Amazon and they find out titles. Like, people have become more interested in the business end of it as well.
Do you think the content is changing along with that as well? I mean, is there more diversity? Or
yes. But I think the thing that I've become more and more conscious of, because I have teenage daughters, is that the conversation, the online conversation, is very different from what's going on in the aisles and borders. So that the online manga conversation has gotten very sophisticated, and we have things like the movable manga feast, where like everybody reviews a single book, and we'll take something like Sexy Boys and Robots out of print. But at the same time, you know, if you look at the kids, like my daughter's friends come to my house and they're like, oh, you have Inuyasha, you know? Like, they're still reading those kind of basic properties, and when you look at the numbers, that's what sells. I mean, what sells is still the books that we're reading and talking about don't actually sell all that well. We are a small minority of the manga reading public, and my kids help me keep it real on that count.
I'm going to ask Erin, because she writes for ANN and has done some work with PW and some other websites as well. Can you describe what a manga fan is right now?
What manga fan is?
So who is a manga fan
now?
Who is
a manga fan?
Yeah.
I'm not going to know that through writing for Anime News Network.
Well, I mean, Anime News Network, I would think, you know, I mean,
it's anime fans, and I'm writing a column about anime, so the people who are responding, for the most part, haven't read a lot of manga, but some of them have, and they compare it to the anime that they've seen. So what is a typical anime, what's a typical manga fan? I think my image of that really changed when I went to like the first Manga Next, where it was the youngest anime con like experience I'd ever been to. It seemed as if the median age was much lower, but on subsequent Manga Next, they seemed to age out of junior high and be actual, now a group of majority like high school students. So I think that's kind of an image that publishers too have in their head. When I go to a lot of like industry panels, publishers always talk about the teenagers reading mm-hmm. their books. But then all the people who I know who read comics and draw comics, and my friends are all like, you know, near 30 or around 30. So mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily in touch with like the mainstream New York Times bestseller manga reader. But I see them at this con, so
yeah,
it's a good time.
Well, I mean, so is your average manga fan buying manga anymore?
Are they buying it?
Yeah.
More or less? Do you mean what? Compared to?
I'm just buying any manga at all. I mean, yeah. Bridget earlier said that, you know, there's, and so did Clarissa, there's this, you know, fragmentation and you have different.
So the people who actually buy things are like a tiny subset of all
of
readers.
Yeah.
Sort of. But I do think that people do buy a bit, but maybe they only buy like 10% of what they read, mm-hmm. which isn't necessarily the case for me personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a budget for manga every month, and I spend that much. But I think other readers are the same way, but they're also reading a lot more online, but I don't like reading comics online that much, so I don't do it.
Ko, what's a Japanese manga fan? And you've lived there for a little while, and you've been able to go to cons over there, like Comic-Con and such. And
yep.
I mean, those guys are, they're fans to an extreme.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess it really depends on how you define fan. Like mm-hmm. we're talking about, you know, the American consumers in terms of fans, like the people that are buying Maximum Ride.
Mm-hmm.
Then you know, in Japan, it's hard to say who's a fan. Like everyone's a fan, right?
Yeah.
But the people at Comic Market. You know, we were talking about niches and like fetishes earlier.
Mm.
Comic Market, I think, even if it isn't sexual, then everyone's got a fetish. Like,
yeah.
You might release a book where you review 50 different kinds of instant ramen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are people that are buying you.
Mm.
And you're being supported. You can publish 10 of those. But at the same time, you know, there are going to be people that are producing, you know, erotic parody material that of whatever's popular.
Mm.
But, It's really a huge mass of humanity over there, and
mm-hmm.
it's all types that are fans, but they're serious.
What's the disconnect though? I mean, are we not serious enough here?
I just have a feeling that in Japan there's kind of almost like a critical mass where, you know, you just have so many people in such a tight area that
mm-hmm.
you know, if It's like the internet these days. You know, you can put up a website and you'll get a couple hundred hits, even if you're doing something crazy. But in almost a comic market, everyone knows they might find the exact thing they want there. So, you know, just with that density, then comes the ability to publish these kinds of things.
Let's kind of move in a slightly different direction here. Scott, how do you read a manga?
How do I read a manga?
Yeah, one of the things that I find really interesting about your articles at Ain't It Cool News is you seem to break down what you read in a very unique way. And it's almost like you have a different type of perception, and I'm kind of curious as to how, you know, what type of format do you actually follow?
How I read manga and how I review it or write to it isn't exactly the same
mm.
because I read manga for pleasure, but also because of the amount of time I have, most of the manga I read is to review. So I take the manga and I try my best to contextualize it. I haven't lived in Japan, don't have a huge amount of knowledge of the culture, but I think I have enough, whereas I can look at the manga, I can look at where it's published, and I can sort of, so you have who's going to read in the U.S. and who's going to read it in Japan. And they're not exactly the same thing. Yotsuba is the example that comes up over and over, because Yotsuba is read by older male audiences in Japan, whereas in the U.S. it got nominated for an Eisner for all ages.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, here's Yotsuba, and you can read this and you can enjoy it. It's an innocent manga. It's about for an older audience trying to recapture the spirit of youth. So I'm 17 or 18, I'm preparing for college, I'm really busy and stressed in my life. Here's how I thought when I was a child, and here's how I can see the world in an exciting new way. And so what I try to say is, here's how I think that manga's written, And you can enjoy it that way, and I try to present manga and how, who, to the people I think they can enjoy it, but I also try to explain it, like, you might come across something that's at odds with your perception of what you'll see in this manga. So it's for, you can say it's for kids, but you're gonna come across something where it's an adult perspective, it's an older perspective, and it's an older way of seeing the world, and sometimes it violates that, how you thought you'd read it on. Ken got Exaxion when Dark Horse released it. They thought this is gonna be manga for teenagers, and we can market it for teenagers, and that's fine, but it's published in the afternoon, the same that publishes hyperviolet manga like Blade of the Immortal. And they came across
like, Oh My Goddess.
And Oh My Goddess. So they came across this issue where who they're trying to publish it for and who it was written for weren't the same thing. And so that threw them into all sorts of trouble. So this volume of Yotsuba might be fine, but maybe next volume you might not come across something that's even more outside of what you expect. So I try to do my best to sort of present that. And the other thing is, Anti-Cool News, it's not read by anime manga fans.
Yeah,
in fact, a lot of the comment is really rejected. I mean, you really get really ugly comments on my posting. Oh, you guys are dying of fire, that kind of jazz. So what I also try to do is say, if you're not a manga fan, maybe here's... So sometimes I'll say, sometimes the manga I'm reviewing is just for manga fans. I try to sort of suggest that, but sometimes it's not. Like, Eden is an example of something where I think, if you read J.G. Ballard, if you're into violent movies, you can find something you like there. And I try to sort of stage that. And here's how, if you don't read manga, here's what you should know about this that might capture your attention there.
So, I mean, you're cognizant of who you're writing for and how they react.
I don't strictly write to them, but I'm prepared for what they're going to come back to me with. And I have expectation for sort of things are going to get rejected. And so some of the stuff I review is just, I don't think most of Anti-Cool News readers are going to have any interest in it whatsoever. For like a Shaman Warrior or something, or Twin Spica, if it does have some appeal, I try to sort of really broadcast that, like, hey, check this out. Here's something that might grab your attention.
Maybe that's part of the key of, you know, why there's so much crossover, foreign writers and American writers and foreign artists working together, and we're seeing things like what's the title that Stanley worked on for
Ultima.
Ultima. Yeah. And then there's Hero Man also.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, Clarissa, I've got an interesting question for you. In the manga that's been released in the last like 5 years or so, can you name a couple of titles that you think will be remembered in about 30 years? I know you're a Blackjack fan,
Ooh.
And Blackjack's been around.
Yeah, I mean, that one's kind of already established for standing the test of time, at least in Japan. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to tell, here. Mm-hmm.
Do you think, like, Naruto's going to be remembered in 30 years? Do you think... I mean, the shine on Death Note is already fading. Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of it will have to do with when some of those series finish off, like, how they do. Like, I think maybe... Naruto is an introduction for a lot of people, and if you look at some of the really long-standing properties in Japan, some of them are things like Saint Seiya or Fist of the North Star, these kind of shonen action series. But it's stuff that people grew up with, and so they have really fond memories of it. So I mean, I think Naruto, yeah, I think Naruto has the potential to have that, but I think it probably depends on. Whether it sort of overstays its welcome, whether it turns into something that people don't like anymore. So it's certainly possible, although people still, know about Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z over here, even though, like, it's not really, I don't think it's on television anymore, but they still market the video games, so that's pretty much stayed around. I think I guess it also depends on whether you mean like broadly or whether you mean like among like critics. You know, I think there's some things like stuff like Pluto, I think. Pluto is probably going to be talked about for a long time, but it's not the kind of thing that has a lot of mainstream popularity.
Well, let's make this a little broad. I mean, like if you read magazines like Anime Age, they sometimes poll readers.
Right.
Like what are the most popular characters of all time? And you'll often see, you know, Nashka up there, and Nashka is now what, she's almost 30 years old. You'll see Lum up there. Lum's as old as I am. You'll see Blackjack, and Blackjack's now, you know, he was already 20 and 25 in the manga, now he's just in his 50s.
Yeah.
You know, it's just as far as like mainstream, where do you think?
Yeah, I think
will the Viz of the future be doing, you know, a classic edition of Naruto in 20, 30 years?
Yeah, I think those kind of massive things probably will still, at least even for just nostalgia factor. I think Naruto is big enough and still selling well. So the fact that it is still continuing to do well, to me, I think indicates that people will still remember it, as opposed to something like, say, Rurouni Kenshin, which was, it's had its popularity, but it doesn't like have the same kind of continuing interest. So, and then I think maybe I'm wondering about Fullmetal Alchemist. I think Fullmetal Alchemist has a potential for that, especially now with the new Brotherhood series. But that's a really strong contender, and for a lot of people, like that's still like one of their top series, and people have a lot of love for those characters. So I think.
Do you have something?
Well, I mean, what about One Piece?
People will
remember One Piece. That'll still be going. Yeah, exactly.
But One Piece is not as popular here as it is in Japan.
No, it's not. More's the pity.
It's sad. I mean, I think One Piece is better than Naruto and Bleach. And I mean, in Japan, it reflects that. That's the biggest one. But here, it's Naruto. I don't know why. I mean,
Bridget, is that even valid? I mean, should we try to go back and, you know, nostalgically look at Pluto or One Piece for how great they are? But I mean, do you think the companies instead are going in the future, they're just going to focus on what sells?
No, I think there's a couple of factors that affect it, and one of them is something that we haven't mentioned at all, which is, but you touched on it when you spoke about Utena, which is that if things aren't in print, they can't develop that long life. I mean, what, all of Sailor Moon is out of print right now?
Yeah.
Revolutionary Girl Utena, my children's favorite manga in the world, Kodocha, been out of print for years. So that's part of it. And then you look at things like Azumanga Daioh, which Yen Press and Yatsuba, which Yen Press has given a second life to. And the other thing I would think is there's the stuff you remember from your childhood. Like when I was a kid, when I go back and I read the books that I loved as a kid to my kids, I was like, God, this was lame. So I don't want to go back and read it.
Yeah.
You know, Curious George, for my own pleasure, not that good when you're an adult. But in terms of things developing a life, they have to have a certain amount of sophistication, things like Blackjack. I mean, I would say Antique Bakery or anything by Clamp, which is showing,
Clamp.
I mean, I'm not actually a Clamp fan, but that is definitely showing signs of immortality.
Yeah, Yoshinaga, I think, has the potential to really be a good long-lasting creator. I think Antique Bakery is probably going to stand the test of time, and I think Ooku has a lot of potential to have a really long-lasting impact. But I may not have that kind of mainstream popularity, but I think definitely in terms of like critics and you know, big comics aficionados, I mean, it did win the Tiptree Award, which is pretty phenomenal for that.
Well, Bridget just brought up the point about books being out of print. I mean, you know, in 20 years, most likely everything's just going to be digital anyway. So you can, you know, catalog all this content, right? I mean, if it's on, you know, whether it's legal or not, if it's on the net, you can always go back to it. It's not, you know, you don't have to go to a store to pick up a copy. I guess my question to Scott would be, do you think digital distribution right now is working for manga?
The economics aren't there. I mean, manga needs to figure out a way to do it, because Well, like we were saying earlier, you have a glut of media choices. In order to, at some point, in order to compete for people's attention, they're going to need to be digital, and they're going to need to figure a business model that works. Right now, I'm not an MBA, and I can't, as such, I can't predict if it is possible for manga to sort of make that leap. But I think in one way or another, it's going to be, it's needed, or else it's gone.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my opinion that it's necessary, but My question really is, you know, is it working right now? I mean, there's Sig Icky, you know, there's Net Comics, you know, there's DMPs, e-comics, you know, Tokyo Pop has stuff
in terms of like Alexa ratings, my site does well, and Anime News Network does well, but One Manga and all those piracy sites blow it out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
And beyond, I think one thing overlooked is beyond the sort of business. Here's how I license my manga. This is the technological side where those sites, they can try anything, and if it doesn't work, they don't need to fire people because they just try again. So sort of they can rapidly evolve in a way that people who need to make money rewrite their back end to their site tomorrow, and if it crashes, no problem, nothing lost.
Mm. Well,
I have a comment to make about this. You know, you look at Sig Icky and Rinnei, and the weirdest thing about that is they have not tried to monetize that site at all. I mean, they're putting their books out there for free.
Mostly the banner ads are just viz ads.
Yeah.
You know,
So there's a lot of ways to make money on the web, but Viz isn't doing any of them. But I think when you say right now, do you mean right now, today, the day that the Apple iPod goes on sale?
Mm.
Because we're talking about the killer app for comics.
Right.
They're going to put comics in the store. And I can tell you, I have a Kindle. I have a Kindle app for my iTouch.
Yeah, I'm still running.
Mm-hmm. Good job of them to give it away for free. My husband buys books that he already owns because it's more convenient to read them on the iTouch.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, like, I think part of it is going to depend on the digital devices. Like, my understanding is that, you know, it's like OEL or whatever you would consider it, but my understanding is that like Yaoi Press has been doing pretty well with sales of their Kindle
versions. They put it everywhere.
And so, you know, I think the iPad will probably help further that as more ebook readers come out, as ebook readers with color screens come out, I think all of that is gonna help. But I think one of the key things is, number one, that they're not really trying to monetize a lot of the sites openly, but it's also one of the big things with digital distribution that the publishers have to struggle against the piracy sites for is convenience. Like if you look at a lot of the wider scale outside just the manga and anime industry discussions about digital distribution and piracy, one of the things that people keep coming back to is that often the digital rights management and other distribution methods used for legal content make it so that it is much more difficult to get to the content, like on a DVD where you have like 15 unskippable things that you have to go through in order to just watch your movie. You can't just push a button and watch it. Whereas like on, you know, things that are pirated often, that stuff is removed and it's so much easier. You know, you have these sites like Sig Icky, you have the site where Rinnei is being posted. You have all these things, you know, that's fine. But, you know, talking about One Manga is a single site that people can go to, and it aggregates all of this stuff. And they don't have to go to 5 different websites, and they can just look it up, and then all they have to do is click, click, click. There's no, like, Flash browser player to use.
Well,
I mean, maybe if the publishers could get something like aggregate.
Yeah, I mean, Sig Icky itself, that's a whole line from what it sounds like from the panel, I mean, most of us aren't too thrilled with Sig Icky still,
they're putting out great stuff.
Oh, you do love them. I mean, what exactly about? Outside of the content.
Oh, okay. The content is great. It is relatively easy to read. I'm not crazy about their reader. One thing I don't like is that I can't grab a screenshot because it's Flash-based. So if I'm blogging about it, I can't. It's really hard for me to get a piece of art. I have the same problem with Zuda.
Okay. Wait.
Yeah. So the reader is fine. The interface is fine. The comics are great.
Yeah.
I just You know, there's a basic fundamental thing here. People expect things on the internet to be free. Well, if I see it in a browser, it's free. If I see it on my iPod, I expect to pay for it.
That goes back to the monetization, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's actually what my question was more pointed towards, not really the content or, yeah.
Well, one thing I have when I read Sayiki is I'm always sort of thinking, what's the sort of business experiment here?
Well, that's my point.
So they're distributing this, so at what point are they going to cut it off? What series are they going to swap out? So what are they trying to prove by sort of putting this here at this time and removing it at that time? It's always sort of some sort of mechanic. You try to sort of project the mechanics onto it all the time.
Okay. A question for you. I mean, how come the Japanese don't have like more content online?
Well, I guess the question of...
they're releasing the stuff. They have all the files. They have all the rights. Mm-hmm. You know. What's the deal there?
Well, I guess it's just a question of like what they gain and what they lose. Mm-hmm. If they put all that out there, it just how much does that impact their Tankobon sales?
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, who's like, will it just, it might just kill off all their smaller series.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, like if there's a series that's being supported by X thousands of people,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, four low five digits, and half of them go online to read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I mean, there have been some publishers who've tried, like,
yep.
Kodansha and Morning 2.
Morning 2.
Right. Yeah.
I can talk about that. But I mean, yeah, like Clarissa was saying, Shuho Saito is doing that with Say Hello to Blackjack after some issues with his publisher. But again, just looking at the amount of money he's making, it's almost about equal to what he was making, you know,
exactly.
with royalties.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing there was he was just so, you know, vocal about things, which is kind of outside of, you know, it's not standard within the
uh-huh. Do you mind if I go back to Iki real fast?
Yeah, go ahead.
Richard, you were talking about how they were, you know, they're not really advertising on their own site, or they're not advertising outside websites to kind of bring in money, but I think David was talking about Alexa ranking earlier, and I do some of this on my free time as well, but like their Alexa ranking, you know, their overall traffic is pretty low. It's around 1.5 million, and you know, one manga is maybe 1,000. So just judging by the amount of, this is me playing armchair marketer, of course, but just based on the amount of traffic they're getting, you know, if you might be able to convince, you know, 1% of your readers to buy this, you know, buy the book because there's a banner ad, it'd probably make them a lot more money than if they were to just kind of put whatever in.
Well, let's keep on talking about magazines. You know, there's been a lot of news about overall just manga, even in Japan, like figures are down. You know, overall figures are down.